We're back on the air. This is Radio Entrepreneurs. My name is Jeffrey Davis. I'm host of the show, also CEO and founder of Mage LLC, management consulting firm. We are sitting in the wonderful offices of Davis Mom D'Augustine. That means I'm sitting with Pat Clendenin. Hi, Pat.
Good morning, Jeffrey. Always a pleasure to host you here and to be on the show. So thank you.
I will try to behave during this segment.
Always behave, but have fun.
It's hard when you're with an attorney because you get, you make a mistake, you're going to get in trouble. But we're talking to somebody we both know very well. He's glad we could get him in today, or you got him in, Greg Rush from Dunn & Rush. And again, we're going to talk about M&A today, right, Greg?
Sure. Yep. You know, sell-side M&A is what we specialize in.
Why don't you give us first a little brief on yourself and the firm, and then we'll get right into it.
Sure. I think, as Jeffrey mentioned, Greg Rush, I'm a partner at the firm Dunn Rush & Company. We set the firm up a little bit more than 8 years ago. We are a boutique investment banking firm. We're a broker-dealer, so there's lots of things that we can do, but we specialize in helping private companies and family-owned businesses, especially when they're looking to sell their company. So sell-side merger and acquisition work is what the firm specializes in. We can do some capital raising, fairness opinions, valuation work, some buy-side work in certain circumstances, but it's really, building relationships with family-owned businesses as they build toward what might be a very important transaction for them and their family, when they decide to take chips off the table.
So, Greg, when before we talk about, and Jeffrey asked you about the kinds of things you do for your clients, explain to our readers who aren't familiar with investment banking, why would a private company really want to consider selling a business that has been in the family and been profitable for many years?
Sure. I mean, there are many, many reasons why ultimately people come to that conclusion. But I think certainly as you get into a second, third generation, I think we've all seen statistics that very few businesses make it to a third or fourth generation. But as children and grandchildren and ultimately their kids become involved, or more the case, not involved in the company, it's harder and harder for the family to sort of keep sort of the continuity and the fairness, if you will, from the different generations. And it's a lot easier to carve up cash than it is to carve up sort of a legacy where you've got one child who's in the business and operating it at a certain level. You've got a cousin who's in the business, but then maybe three or four other cousins, children, and grandchildren who aren't.
But I would also say that if you're going to transfer cash versus an asset that needs to be worked, and cash needs to be worked too, it may be a more predictable way of protecting the futures of your family.
Sure. Sure.
And that's really what it's all about. I think what they're looking at is they're trying to protect the future of their family. And sometimes too many families get too oriented around that means, keeping the business in the wrong hands versus liquidating. And I think you really have to look at it objectively. I don't think a family can always look at that objectively.
No, and I think transition of management and who has the capability and the willingness and desire to run a company changes when you go from generation to generation. And I think the worst of outcomes for any family can be if you don't have the right leadership and the company suffers and its performance suffers and you lose the value for the entire family if it's not run by people that really enjoy doing it and are very good at doing it. And that can change as the generations come.
Well, and business is getting much more complicated at a exponential speed, and you have to make sure that they have the commitment also to take care of the business. Mm-hmm. Business is a more than a full-time job. It's a full-time life affair.
And as we've seen with a lot of family-owned businesses, I mean, even ourselves who, essentially run our own businesses, we work 24/7 these days. I mean, you're available constantly. Social media and being able to do and work from anywhere, really has changed the way people work. And that's true of family businesses also.
I appreciate you saying that because I always tell that to my staff and they just think that I'm a freak. What are the most common mistakes that you see going on in this particular realm?
Sure. I think, we tend to talk to people about, what are the three biggest mistakes somebody might make? And, I think we order them sort of 3-1. Not preparing sort of soon enough is probably the biggest mistake. And what's interesting about that is it doesn't matter whether you want your kids and grandkids to own the business eventually or whether you're working toward a sale of the business or something in between. The preparation is the type of thing that will increase the value of your company, and you need to be thinking about these things constantly. So, things that we're most lacking in preparation are really the focus on the financial side of the house. So thinking about audited statements versus reviewed statements, the ability to produce internal monthly financials sort of promptly and within 2 weeks of the end of a month. I think the types of things that are going to be good management tools and management practice, but also going to be critical when you start going down this path of doing any kind of a financing or an M&A transaction, and really preparing yourself for what is an excruciating due diligence process when you try to go through these types of transactions. So that's sort of one of the mistakes. The next one is sort of not gaining a thorough understanding of how a buyer is going to value your business. And I think this is one where, you know, it shouldn't cost you any money. Of course, it costs you time to invest in providing the right information to the right people who can give you a sense for this. But you know, you really do need to understand, what are the key things that drive value in your industry? And then also you got to highlight and scrutinize the things that are weaknesses of your business from a perspective of a buyer. And you have to try and address those weaknesses proactively to the best degree that you can. Critical factors that you need to understand is how the size of your business is going to impact value, what your revenue growth trends, what your profit margins are, customer concentration, environmental, legal concerns, all relative to other people in your industry are going to be critical things that you need to understand. You know, larger companies are valued at higher multiples than smaller companies. It's a risk issue in terms of what people will perceive to pay. But I think the number one mistake that we see people making in terms of not being able to execute the best possible transaction for themselves is not setting themselves up in a process to generate competitive offers. We almost never see the first person that comes and knocks on the door being the guy that ultimately provides the best offer for an owner. And not all businesses can run through a competitive process. You need to have the type of dynamics where you're going to be able to get buyers to sort of act and behave in a way that you control. But I think
demand, you're saying, raises price.
Absolutely. The more people you bring to the table, the more likely it is you're going to get outlier bids and you get a higher price.
Right.
And it's not always price. I mean, price is obviously a significant element of what people are focused on, but it could be the terms. It could be who the buyer is and what their intentions are.
Right? Usually, when I sold my house in Wellesley, I had this conversation with the buyer who was trying to nickel and dime me. And I said, you know what? I'll take less because I like my neighbors. I like my neighborhood, and I'm not going to sell it to somebody who behaves like this.
Mm-hmm.
And so that changed the dynamic very quickly.
Well, I think also when someone's started a family business, and it might be 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, 80 years, they don't want to see the people who have hung out with them longer just totally discarded, or they want to see the brand maintained or the name maintained. So they have non-monetary needs that they perceive need to be satisfied by a buyer, which you can't guarantee always, but they're looking for the character and the intent of the buyer, not just the price, correct?
Completely.
This is the family name. This is the family business.
Absolutely, and it's their legacy. If a business is big enough and strong enough to command this type of a process where you can get competitive offers, you know, what we tend to do is we run what's called a two-stage sale process where you get, we're running interference and, you know, the buyers are going to review materials, not have access to management, not, you know, kick the tires and do things on site and the types of things can be very disruptive to the operation of a business, and submit an indication of interest, and you skinny that group down to a smaller group of folks that you pick based on, you know, whether you've screened them and like them best. And what we normally tell people is you move that people through management meetings and tours and those types of things, and you get final letters of intent from people and you pick the one you like best. But often it's not always about price. We say all of these people have sent you a proposal that you think is qualified enough to bring them to this stage. At this point, pick the one you like best for whatever reason that may be, and we'll get the best terms that we can from the party you like best.
And in an ideal world too, Greg, don't you want your clients to come to you early enough, because you may advise them and say, hey, look, if you do this and that to the business, you hire this, you rearrange the board, you rearrange the sales structure, whatever it is, you know, 6 months out, it's going to be in a much better position for us to get you a better deal.
And you know, Greg, that's a lot of what I do. I would say I'm in the pre-Greg Rush part of the process.
Yep.
That families will come to me and say, what do we need to do so that we can go to someone like you, and how do we position the firm and make sure that there's a stable management, a good strategy in place so that they're buying an organization, not just an individual father or mother or anyone who built a business.
Totally right, and it's critical. I mean, you got to surround yourself. I mean, business owners, you know, oftentimes are loath to spend money on a lot of things. But if you look at what you're creating in terms of the value you're ultimately going to generate, I think you need help from professionals that understand what outcome you're trying to achieve, and they'll help you get there.
Well, the more the business is institutionalized, if I can be so general, the better it looks like they're buying really retained value and reoccurring value.
Couldn't be more right. I think, you know, you only want to do this once, and you want to do it right. And I think there's a lot of things, kind of to Pat's point, you can sit there. A lot of times when we meet early with companies to try and help them understand the way the process works, takes a long time. You know, the things you're going to need to do, the holes in your management team you might need to fill, all of those kinds of things that we can identify for you. A lot of times people have a sense after talking to their financial advisor and other folks about what they'd like to generate for the sale proceeds in a transaction. And if the company's not there yet, we can show the mechanics that say, well, a company of this size gets valued at a certain multiple. And if you flip that analysis on its head and say, well, if you want it to be worth this, here's where you need to set the goalposts. Here's where you're going to need to get to in revenue and profitability to give yourself a high likelihood of having that middle value be in the range that you need to achieve. But it's all about getting the help ahead of time. And if you do it right, you know, this is a 5 to 7 year window you need to think about. I think, you know, we were talking a little earlier about the fact that, you know, there are people out there, you know, you have to align when the market is ready, when your business is ready, and when you personally are ready. And, you know, if you, just because you want to work for 2 or 3 more years, ask people in 2007 what happened when the market was ready, the business was ready, and they said, you know, things are going to be great, I'll work for 2 more years, and they didn't prepare and they didn't think about executing something. A lot of those businesses have had a difficult time recovering, maybe weren't even able to sell even today. You know, that was a rough thing.
That was a missed window.
It was. So you don't want to miss your window.
I see a lot of missed windows and a lot of different stories we could tell. I could tell a lot of stories. I know a company just could be a little bit different where the night before the closing party, drinking. And inappropriate, and not necessarily saying the right thing to the buyer, and ruining the deal. And I always tell people, when you're in a business meeting, right until the check clears the bank, I don't want to see or hear that you're drinking in front of anybody.
It's a good reason to have lawyers and bankers do all the talking for you right up to closing.
Exactly. We'll have to have Greg back on the show to hear more of the story.
Well, you know, because Greg is one of the personalities that you want to always have back.
He's
got a great personality. Greg, if someone wants to find you at Dun & Rush, and this is a good economy to be looking at these things just to find out what's the litmus test, where do I stand in the marketplace, how would they find you?
Well, you can always go to our website and you can see a number of the transactions we've done, the types of services we do, and our backgrounds, which is www.dunrush.com. And my personal email is grush@dunrush.com.
You know, Pat, I know I'm going to reach out to him today, so I want to know more, and I want to talk to you more about it, so I don't see why other entrepreneurs wouldn't, because I'm just like everybody else. And I want to thank you for setting this up. You're really great. That's Pat Clendenin, obviously, I'm talking about.
Thank you, Jeffrey. It's always a pleasure.
Great. And
it's great to have you on the show, Greg.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you,
You're
going to
come back again, right?
Anytime.
No tie next time. Stop making me look bad.
No, tie is preferred.
You guys with the greatest common denominator, right?
When you're bankers and
you
lawyers.
You guys with ties in the summer. You're killing
exactly
me.
Exactly right.
But he's got some great style. Look at the colors he's got going on.
Wow, I can't do that. My name is Jeffrey Davis, Tylus, and we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back after these messages on the Davis Mom D'Augustine Radio Entrepreneurs Special.